There's a place some of us go each fall. A place where the ring of a bell filters through the covers and hurried shouts of "Bird up!" bring everybody to attention. A place where the playful puppies around our house are transformed here to driven bird finders. And where there is confidence in the slow pace of the silver-muzzled old veterans. Where our friends tell the same old stories each year, and none of us seem to mind. Where great shots are forgotten, and epic misses never fade. Where an old gun will have a story to tell, if only it could speak to us. Where all the good seats are claimed by the dogs. If you have a camp, you know these things all too well. If you don't, well, you're always welcome here. So pull up a chair, tell us about your favorite gunner dog, and we'll admire the birds together and talk the night away by the fire. Welcome to Bird Camp. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bird Camp podcast. I am your host, Joe Schwenke. And those of you paying attention to the calendar probably are saying, well, aren't you supposed to be on a pace of 2 podcasts a month, 25 in a year? It's April. I've only heard you once in all of March, and you would be correct. That's because I've somehow got a little lazy. That's only partially true. This all happened back on the 23rd. Of course, I'm recording early April here with this portion of it. Back on the 23rd, a group of side-by-side shooters that we call SAS, the Society of the American Side-by-Side Shotgun, got together and we did our spring classic. Of course, they let an interloper like me join them anyway with my German gun. And of course, we had a lot of good fun and my shooting was awful. That's not normal, but that was a good time. I had fun. They had fun. They whooped me in my little prop bets, and along the way, $165 was raised for the Michigan Sharptail Grouse Association for habitat purposes, and that check has been put in the mail. I was thoroughly defeated, which now means that we are tied, that group and I, at one kind of victory apiece, and so next year, there'll be a tiebreaker for more habitat money and some good-natured fun. A few things coming up. We're just going to take care of some business, then I'll explain kind of what happened here. Of course, it's hunt test season, and I would encourage you to get out and enjoy your dogs in the off-season with some hunt tests. Coming up in May, in kind of the format of this podcast, I will be bringing my wireless microphones down to Green Acres Sportsman's Club over in Roberts, Illinois, and doing a simulated Downton Day, which is 4 drives, all with clay targets, no birds. And some good fun with a friend of mine now over at A Break in the Action podcast, Ryan Doughty. And maybe I'll get a few sidebar street interviews, which is kind of what I have going on today. A few other announcements, though. First, hopefully somebody saw this post on Facebook already. Andy Cullen from Northern England, Great Britain, is coming back again. His Laocoon Gun Dogs training seminar that we had last summer. He's doing another one. It's a little bit more abbreviated, a little shorter, a little cheaper. Again, at Blackbriar Spaniels coming up in June. And if you run a Flushing dog or you are interested in one, it might be something to take a look. There's both the handler's price and the observer's price. And if it's anything like last year, I highly recommend coming out, bringing your dog if you would like, but at least coming out and listening to Andy and watching the dogs run and seeing his perspective in action there, as well as him helping out handlers this time around as well. Looking down here through, of course, my own notes. We're going faster than the normal podcast. I'm going to have some new guests coming on here in April, so we're going to get 3 episodes in April, one of which is with Ben Beeman from Pheasants Forever, the Michigan Habitat Coordinator, and kind of a way of bragging up what he's done and what's coming up, and kind of keeping the membership here in the state appraised as far as some of the good news and successes that they've been having in the habitat, front, is, I guess, is what you would call it. Anyway, that looks like a lot of my notes. Of course, I'll go through our sponsors here real quick. Sorry, guys, I won't read the whole thing, but I want to make sure that all six of them are covered here as well. That is Wildcard Outfitters and Guide Service. You know them, and please check them out for the variety of things they do. The grouse, the woodcock, the walleye, the waterfowl, and maybe even a bear hunt. Of course, you've seen me throw a few things out your way with aspen thicket grouse dogs. If you're in the Michigan area especially, or anywhere near the UP, you know Uncle Grouse and his method with dogs and getting grouse dog. Grouse dogs are really his thing. Not to mention, too, if you see his posts on social media, look in the background of those posts when he's running dogs, taking pictures. Those posts show great habitat. That's where the birds were. That's where those puppies found birds. And kind of a great asset, especially if you're curious about if you're in the right place or not. Just more or less, just follow Dennis. Look at all his pictures. Where he goes and what that looks like, that is grouse. Anyway, also Field Armor, the toughest dog vests on the market. I was able to use my gun case this other week at the SAS to keep Miss Myrtle nice and safe while I was being beaten by everybody. And of course, free shipping when you use the promo code BIRDCAMP. Pine Hill Gun Dogs is, of course, on my list. I talked to Scott. I told him I'd have him on later this year with a couple of things that some listeners asked about. And I'm thinking it's going to be on tuning up before season with your older dog, or introducing an older dog into the hunting game. So something to keep in mind. He'll be on his way into the podcast rotation again this year. Scott Brozier from Pine Hill Gun Dogs. Also Second Chance Bird Dogs. I was texting and talking a bit with Mike today, and a couple dogs have new owners thanks to his work there. And of course, Second Chance Bird Dogs. And last but not least, of course, Collar Clinic. Of course, I like to see those guys every time there's an event and they come down here, and look forward to many more meetings. So those are the sponsors. We got those out of the way. This podcast is different. I have a lot of guests. I think five or six of them, in fact. And what I did was I took my wireless remote mics down to the SAS Classic there. And when I was done shooting and thoroughly humiliated, I had a great time being humiliated. I just didn't shoot very well. Walked around with those microphones, introduced myself, clipped a mic onto somebody. They'd say, what's that? Oh, it's a microphone and you're on the Bird Camp podcast. And so I was able to get, I bet, a good 40 minutes worth of things. The questions varied from something informative and something that people would maybe like to hear, down to a little bit of pot-stirring questions, of course. If you saw the post with some of those ideas on there, it'll definitely be a fun one. And it was neat, just seeing people, meeting people. I think I literally clipped microphones onto total strangers, introduced myself, and then we were off on our questions. But the last guy, instead of being little five-minute interviews, the last one is with Matt Hansen from Superior Case Restorations. And before you know it, of course, I'd had a couple of sips here and there on some local libations when we were done. And 30 minutes later, so I did have that gift of gab a little bit. And instead of five-minute street interviews, he and I sat down, and I'm going to put that at the end of the podcast as the last one. And there was an opportunity. Of course, I'd had a couple of cups in me already, and I was not going to shoot after having a couple drinks. But he offered to shoot over a 100-year-old, probably closer to a 120-year-old Parker that he and his brother own. I will take him up on that offer. That is a beautiful little gun. Fit reasonably well, but the idea of taking this gun out, I'll let him talk about it later. One of only a handful ever made It's the only one kind of the public could ever get to see. If you happen to see the guys from Superior Case Restoration and they're at an event, chances are that little Hammer Parker is somewhere around, and by all means, be careful when you handle it, but do enjoy the fine craftsmanship there, as well as that little piece of rarity that is not in a gun collector's safe somewhere, but available for you to see and touch. So with that, I am going to get into the podcast and begin splicing in these interviews.
What's your name again?
Joe.
Joe.
All right, so this is Joe Swanky. This is the Bird Camp Podcast, and I'm here with Steve with the
Vintage Gunners.
Vintage Gunners.
Chapters of Vintage Gunners.
Okay, and so we're here at the SAS Classic, where I've just gotten beat handily by about everybody I wagered in the Axis Challenge. And that money will now go to the Sharptail Grouse Association to pay for probably a controlled burn, which I am in a huge favor of. But this is all about side-by-side, so we have a handful of street interview questions. Steve, do you think the side-by-side is an advantage or a disadvantage to the bird hunter?
It's an advantage.
Why?
Two barrels quick, you miss and you get it over with and you move right on.
That makes sense, doesn't it? Do you have a first side-by-side memory?
Oh, first side-by-side memory is my grandpa shooting the Stevens 410 at rabbits. Back behind the bar and chasing them around with a little 410 popper.
Yep.
Beautiful. Still have the gun.
Nice. Okay, now we're going to get into the stuff where I stir the pot.
Oh, boy.
Do you think a 12-gauge has too many pellets in it?
Not for me.
Not for you.
Clearly not for me.
Sounds like my shooting today. What was your best excuse today?
It was too close.
All right. I'm gonna find if Dean Hepp's here, so I gotta throw this one in here. You think 410 shooters are show offs?
I think they're underappreciated. You know, they're not that showy offy. If the gun's good, you're good.
and the way he shot today, it was clearly a showcase in what a handful of BBs will do.
So we put on the double nasty.
Okay.
And Dean was the winner last year. Now, he took the crown, but there's a lot of talk he's not going to hold it this year.
Mm.
The previous champions are lining up. We got a 28-gauge Winchester 21 that's going to reclaim it. So the Dean and his 410 might not hold the line.
Oh,
it's going to be good.
Boy. I know I was competitive last year with him. This year, it was an embarrassment on my end. He may have almost doubled me up in score.
We'll see if you can take the pressure.
Right? All right, I'm going to get over and find a bourbon myself, Steve, but thank you.
Wonderful.
So don't stutter.
No. Yeah, don't stutter. Anyway, we're at the SAS Classic. I have one of our lady shooters here. What was your name again?
Shirley Sutherland.
All right, I have a couple of easy street level kind of questions here. Do you think the side-by-side is an advantage or a disadvantage to the bird shooter?
You know, I'm new to the side-by-side shooting, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it's an advantage or a disadvantage. I know that once I picked it up, I shoot a lot better with it than I did my over-under that I used to shoot.
Okay.
In my semi-auto. So, I mean, I like it better.
That works for me, too. Anyway. What kind of configuration is your gun? Splinter forend, English stock, or is it something a little more usable?
Okay, so the first gun that I bought side by side was a year ago, and it's a regular pistol grip, and I really like that. It's really comfortable single trigger. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I got to try something else because I'm left-handed. I found one with a left-handed stock. The only one I could find was the CZ Bob White Southpaw. Mm-hmm. So I tried that, but it's a double trigger. And it has the English stock. And I really, really like it. So I think I like that one best so far.
And now I'll give you one more here. How's that? Do you think a 12-gauge is too many pellets?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. They say that there's a difference and an advantage, but I don't think so.
Okay. I thought it would have helped me today. That's why I have to start asking that question.
Yeah. I think the wind pushed my 20-gauge pellets in a different direction. That might be why I missed a couple of them.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Nancy.
Shirley.
All right. So we're back at the SAS Classic again. What's your name?
Tim Swanson.
Well, good to meet you, Tim. I'm
nice to meet
Joe.
You.
Of course, I've been around 2 years now. This is awesome. Were you a year last year?
I was not. This is first year.
So you got the bad weather the first year you're here.
I did. I'm never coming back.
No, oh, then let's not quite judge a book quite like by its weather. But
we were told it was going to be 60 and sunny.
I shot so much better last year when it was sunny and 60.
All right.
But a couple of things then. What was your best excuse today?
Best excuse? My shells.
Your shells?
Yeah, my shells. They're just off the shelf. I didn't hand load them.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
there you go.
Well, we had some that were hand loads, and they were also an excuse.
Oh, okay.
We had a couple of duds, and we had to clear a bore once, but always listen for the right sound. If you don't hear the right sound.
Right.
Yeah, we had a couple of puffs in there. So what's your dream side-by-side?
Probably a 28-gauge Merkel.
Ooh, nice choice.
Yeah, I like German guns.
That's really about the finest answer I could have heard today.
Like German dogs.
German dogs.
I have Sours, I have Simpsons,
oh, yeah.
And a Merkel. And I love Merkels.
Yep. I shot today with a... I'm going to get it wrong now that I've had two sips here and I'm tired. Huh. I got a 20-gauge Merkel myself.
Oh, okay.
And a 471? 147.
Okay.
It's a 147, so... She has a, that's what,
it's a Beretta.
It's a European thing where, yeah, she has a 471 Beretta. I shoot a 147 Merkel, and they did it just to confuse everyone else. What is the best gauge for a side-by-side?
I would say 28. It's just expensive to shoot, so I shoot a 12.
Do you think that maybe you kind of cause an unfair advantage when you shoot such a large gun?
No, because everybody around me is shooting 12.
Oh, okay. And do you think that 410 shooters are just showing off?
I think some of them are, and some of them are just damn good.
I can agree with that one. That one whooped me today. Satan. He whooped everybody. All right, well, thank you. All right, we're still here at the SAS Classic with somebody who beat me today. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
So, you beat a 63, right?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Okay.
I shot a 73.
Oh, okay. I'm going to do better next time.
I will too, I promise.
It's cold, it's blustery here. You've heard some of my other questions, so I'm going to start out with, what's your first side-by-side memory?
My first side-by-side memory was my first wild bird I ever shot. Was a woodcock over my father-in-law's Weimaraner. With a 20-gauge Ugarticea that I inherited from him because he couldn't handle double triggers.
I know that feeling. I'm a single-trigger man myself. What's the best side-by-side gauge?
Best side-by-side gauge? Oh, I'm torn between 16 and 28-gauge. It depends on what I'm using it for. For hunting, man. I think if I had to say if I had to have one, it'd be a 16-gauge. I can shoot anything from, you know, ducks somewhat nearby, pheasants, woodcock, grouse. I can make it work.
Okay. Do you think 410 shooters are just showing off?
Without a doubt, yes.
Okay. And the last one, what's your dream side-by-side?
Oh, man. That's tough, but I'm really split between either some type of English best, like a Holland and Holland or Purdy, or Boss, or just an extremely high grade, like A1 Special Parker.
Mm. I don't have a dream one yet. And now that I'm kind of... No, I'm stuck with the gun I have.
Well,
and it's kind of dreamy, so maybe I'm already there.
Most days you shoot Myrtle pretty darn well.
But when the chips are down, they fell on the floor.
Hey, we all have our days.
All right, we'll get to the next person. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
What is that?
All right, we're at the Bird Camp Podcast, and we're at the SAS Classic. So who am I talking to?
The Target Setter.
The Target Setter.
Yes, sir.
Get a bat. No.
Yeah, right.
No, actually, you humiliated me rather badly a few times.
I apologize.
No, it's my fault. I hadn't practiced in September. And I dropped the first six targets on sporting clays. I started out 0-6, and it got worse from there. Well, no, I did hit some, but at that point, my betting had already caught up with me.
Oh, no.
But, out there, what kind of targets, kind of describe the course? We're here at Malta Lakes Sportsman Association.
Yes.
So describe a little bit of the course to us.
So
someone who hasn't shot here yet knows to practice first.
So our course is more of what you would call an upland course.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's more of a woodsy course.
Yep.
So you got, you know, 40, 50 yards is probably your limit on a lot of our targets.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of crossers, a lot of going away, and then we try to throw as much specialty targets as we can. Some 90 millimeter, some, you know,
there
some
was a
rabbits.
Pink, there was a pink one that was murdered at sea with a, I had a purple tint glass to begin with.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
And it was awful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not the best mix. But,
you had some 20
yeah.
yard minis that just, as mm-hmm. long as you were on them, they crushed them.
Station 8 had a nice little floater.
Uh-huh.
That was a little blooper.
Yeah.
It probably got you good, but.
I made it through that one, but catching the other one going up the side of the tree line.
Yeah.
Was a nice transition. That,
yeah.
You have to be patient mm-hmm. and shoot well, mm-hmm. which I didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to really increase the shooting ability of all of our shooters around. So what I've been trying to do the last couple of years is really try to get a more of a tougher course, I guess you want to call it. Not as much distance, but more technical.
It definitely gave me a variety. Which I love to see a variety, especially in a 50 course.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, the distances weren't so bad that I'm shooting 3/4 ounce 20 gauge.
Right.
And I'm not feeling undergunned. I'm just feeling stupid, mm-hmm. which was my fault.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At the same time, no, it was a great course.
Thank you.
And thank you again for putting this all on.
Yeah, no, I'm passionate about it. I've been doing this since I was about 12 years old.
Okay.
Been setting targets out here since about 5 years ago. So.
Yeah.
I've been, I'm really very passionate about it.
Good.
It's good. My thing. I love to trick the shooter, you know?
And yeah, they weren't so tricky as to be unhittable.
Right. Technical though.
They were technical enough because we had a lot of stuff that either had a little bit of a drop or a mm-hmm. little bit of a swing to it. And it was just enough to see that it was doing that.
Yeah.
But for the bird shooter, it was going to be great experience.
Yeah. I was trying to be the most, a lot of clubs try to do like a simulated game. Things like that. I try to get a lot of big crossers, a lot of straightaway, like normal targets for a bird shooter, right?
Yeah, the
most
the
realistic.
Plays.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Well, we appreciate it. Okay. We went through the SAS Classic for 2024 awards. Of course, I got the booby prize of, I don't think I beat anybody today in my access challenge. I'm here with a guy that I have clearly been talking trash to. Dean Hepp. And Dean, I'm going to throw this question out there because I did it to everyone else first before you. And that is, do you think 410 shooters are just show-offs?
No, I think they're recoil-lessies is kind of the way I would put it. Just recoil adverse.
And to be fair, like you shot a
81.
It's been windy, cold. One of those disciplines was wobbles trap. You shot a 21 in wobble trap. With a 410.
Yes.
You nearly got my Sporting Glaze score in a 25 target wobble trap with a 410.
Yeah.
I'm like, it wasn't even competition. Like, I'm not sure I really even got going. You didn't participate in the XS challenge though either. But what gun were you shooting today?
Today in the trap, I was shooting a Model 21 410, a Parker VH 410 in skeet and a Parker VH 410 in sporting glaze.
And you got me by almost 20 birds in a 100 target shoot off today. You didn't participate, so I don't have to put in your honor at least. So you saved me some money there by not beating me on purpose. But my goodness, in the wind with wobble trap, you got a 21. We'll go with some of the other questions, and clearly you don't think that shooting a side-by-side is a disadvantage on wild birds, do you?
Oh, not at all. That's probably one of my favorite guns to take bird hunt. I think it's probably more advantageous in hunting than it is in target, for sure.
Okay, what makes it a better advantage?
I think it's a quicker to sight plane on if you're shooting from low gun, and I shoot low gun in my targets as well. I don't shoot. The only time I shoot from a high gun is that wobble trap.
Mm. So that's where you clearly got the advantage, was shooting from a pre-mounted position.
Right.
I will say I pre-mounted with my 20 gauge and it didn't really help the score at all. But what's your favorite memory of a side-by-side?
Probably right after I got my VH 410 Parker, I was down in Costco and shot 48 out of 50. That was probably the only one most memorable.
So you're doing what people sometimes do with a 12 gauge with a 410.
It's the hardest thing is getting an ounce and an eighth in those little bitty shells, but once you master that, it's all down there.
I don't have my notes in front of me because they're in my pocket, but do you think that the 12 gauge people have a decided advantage?
Oh, definitely. Our fearless leader here for SAS has a 410, and he has a Model 21 12 gauge double trigger, and I challenged him to come to this course to shoot his 410 to develop that handicap, and he's yet to do that. I think given the same person, if you give him a 410 and you give him a 12 gauge, I think there's a distinct advantage of having that 12 gauge.
Do you think there are too many pellets in a 12 gauge?
Yeah, they say you need two to break a target. There's 500 in a 12, so you're wasting like 498 of them.
What's your dream side by side? I mean, you already have VH Parkers.
Right now, there's a really nice Purdy hammer gun on the internet, but unfortunately, it costs twice the value of my house. But that would probably be a Purdy hammer gun. That'd probably be it.
I'd go over that too. All right, Dean. Well, thanks for beating almost pretty much all of us.
No,
did you take the high overall?
No, I did not. I got beat by eight targets, high overall.
And they used the 12, of course.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, that doesn't even seem like a sporting man sort of thing.
Right.
But well, no. Anyone here at the SAS Classic in March in the snow? Because why make it a spring classic when it could snow 4 inches on you ahead of time? We all had a riot today, but thank you, Dean, for being on.
All right, thank you.
I'm a rambler a little bit by trade. All right, we're good. So we're at the SAS Classic again, and let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Schwenke. Who are you?
I'm Matt Hansen.
Matt Hansen.
Of Superior Case Restorations.
Okay, so now I'm putting a few things together then. You're here, you're the guy that puts, if I have an antique case that doesn't have all quite the felt together or things have started to break again, the cool cases that go with the cool guns, you know, like, well, a friend of mine showed up with a Henry Atkin that may need some work later on. So you're really the guy that does the case that goes with the whole thing, that puts the package together.
That is correct. I got into this because I purchased a vintage shotgun. We had a family vintage shotgun, and my brother acquired it, and then we found out that there was this whole society or whole bunch of people that did this side-by-side thing. And so we naturally kind of slowly gravitated into it, and then he gave me a shotgun that cost roughly about $1,200. I wanted it one of the fancy English cases. For my gun, I found out that if I had to purchase it brand new, it would be $3,000 to $4,000. So then I went online, purchased my own vintage case, and slowly taught myself how to make these cases for these guns. One thing leads to another, and now I have about I have a $30,000 business now.
So you found a way to take what looks like a elongated suitcase, really, and that holds my gun, and now that's the whole business, really, is turning those back into something usable again.
Yes, it's basically the guys in the States had the guns. The cases were all in England. I brought the cases from England to the States and said, let's make your gun look beautiful in a case. So that's what I do.
Right, and those are the oaken... Was it the oaken leather sort of things that you see with a London Best or a Birmingham gun? They come with this wonderful traveling case, broke down with tools.
Yes.
Kind of the things you want to have when you get that dream gun.
Absolutely. You buy your gun, when you get a case done, it's 100% custom. It's whatever you and I decide.
Yeah.
If you want the tools, yeah, we're going to find them. If you want the label, yeah, we're going to find it. Vintage tool, vintage label, it doesn't matter. We're going to come up with this. It's, I always tell people this thing. It's your gun, but it's my case. And my case has to look better than your gun. And you love your gun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an incredible pride, really, isn't it?
It really is. When I first started doing it, it was hard to sell the first couple of cases because I just wanted to keep them. It would fit your gun or whose ever gun, but I just wanted to keep the case so I could just look at it because I know, like, wow, that looks really nice. I don't have a gun that fits in it, but it looks really nice. So I did a lot of that, but it's getting easier and easier as I help people do this. A lot of the guys and gals don't realize that it's really easy for me to do this. I don't mind doing it. I enjoy doing it. And making these little jewelry boxes for your pride and joy, which is your side-by-side, is something I really enjoy.
Yeah. And that's a really fitting way to say it, a jewelry box for your pride and joy. It's, and I have one of those, right? I have my dream gun already. So we'll move into, what's your dream gun as a side-by-side?
My dream gun is now, it has changed, is now a Parker PH zero frame 16 gauge with 28 inch barrels, 100% completely original, nothing been done to it. That's my new dream gun.
What are your chances of getting that gun?
My brother looked up the serial numbers for the guns I could possibly own. He says it's now one in about 1,000. Now, my budget is not what it's worth, but I somehow think that I'm in this belief that I'm going to find the Mona Lisa behind a print that I buy in a yard sale type of. That's how I'm going to acquire this gun.
Right, right. So, and that's really, and at the SAS Classic here, right, we've seen dream guns all day today. I saw a 2.5-inch chambered Parker Damascus that, if my goodness, if it wasn't me, it was a dream gun. The Model 21s that came in here, the Foxes that we shot with, all of them are almost in a way deserving of, these aren't just travel cases, they're display cases. They should be open most of the time, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I have done it. I did a display case for the Golden Hearts Parker, which allegedly is Annie Oakley's 12 gauge. I did that for a gentleman in Florida. I've done some of the very highest end double gun sets for the companies like Boss, Holland & Holland, even some of the lesser known English makers, like a Hollis case, not a Holland, but a Hollis. Absolutely love working on them because the guns are different than the American guns, like the Parkers, the Foxes, and the Lefevers, but they're still so incredibly fun to work with. These cases are so different than the other cases. You're shaping this wood to make this gun fit in there. So,
a few extra questions, and I know a lot of the guys here shot sub-gauge, right? They think the 16 is the gentleman's gauge or bore, if you want to get technical. Do you think the 12 bore has too many pellets in it?
I think the only, I don't, any gauge I'm not against. I just think that when they made shotguns, the individual shotgun makers said the utilitarian shotgun is the 12 gauge. And the guys who seek the smaller and smaller and smaller sub gauges, just like the 28s and the 410s, they made so few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think of a gun like the 16 gauge or a 20 gauge as a utilitarian piece that grandpa could have owned. And he hunted with it every day to feed his family. But yet it was a sub gauge. And he's like, this is the universal gun. I'm not going to shoot my birds to pieces. Maybe if I get a duck close enough, I can bring him down. Or, you know what? Maybe if I can lure a deer within, 50 feet of me, I could even take that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, actually. But so on the heels of this, you're one of the later interviews I've done. So now that I've done the 12 bore question, do you think the 410 guys are maybe showing off?
I don't think so. I think it's my brother, for example, is a 20 gauge guy, and I'm a 16 gauge guy, and he knows that, hey Matt, I saw the 16 gauge. It doesn't matter who made it. He's like, I saw the 16 gauge. I know you're a 16 gauge guy. I think guys and gals are that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're trying to show up. Yeah, everybody realizes how rare they are, but my 16 gauge, very low grade Parker, is by far the best gun here because mm-hmm. it's my gun, and it's my gauge, and it's my length of pull, and it's my barrel length, and it's my barrel construction. It's everything I want. So my gun is by far the best one here.
Right. So the phrase, this is my gun, and there are many like it, but this one is mine, is really brings a lot more true in shotguns even than in the movie from Full Metal Jacket where that line kind of came from.
Yeah, this is, in this world, and this world being the side-by-side world, I worry a lot about it not growing and not evolving and not, I'm afraid it's going to die, and I don't want it to die. So I want to, like, don't ever say, like, well, that guy's got a 410, and I know those are expensive, and that gun costs this much. And I got a really funny story for you. My brother and I always thought that we wanted to buy this world's most expensive shotgun. And I said, well, the only way we're going to get it is through an auction. And this is honest, Scott, truth. He went on an auction site, and it was just an estate auction. And he bought a Parker Lifter Hammer 20 gauge. He paid $900 for the gun. The stock was broken. It was glued together, and it had wood particles in it. He'd got a letter on it and found out it was owned by a Parker shooter. It's one of 15 guns ever made. In his configuration, it's one of 5 guns ever made. The following week, we're at a gun show, and they found the gun collector people found out he owned it. Guy held out $6,000 in cash for it. He said no. Oh. And he went to me and he goes, Matt, I can sell this for $6,000. I paid $900. I said, no, you'll never ever see another one.
No, you won't.
It's going to end up in a private collection. This is the only one out there that people can shoot. And by the way, if you want to shoot it today, right now, you can. He will take you outside and stand and watch you and be just so excited to do it.
And 20 gauge, you said?
20 gauge Lifter Hammer made in the.
So it's my caliber. So it's my bore.
Yeah.
So I'm a 20 guy.
If you want to shoot it, he will let you shoot. And I will tell you this. Most likely, it will be your only opportunity in life to shoot this particular Parker. And most likely, it will be. There are guys in the club that are like, I've been collecting Parkers for 30 years, and I've never ever seen one. He's had the wood redone, but he saved all the old stock parts for it because you could always turn it back to original.
Yeah.
So.
Oh wow. So I might actually want to do that because.
Where you got time.
Absolutely, and the skeet course would be phenomenal with that.
He'll give you shells. He'll give you the gun, and
I'd be tickled pink to do that.
Yeah, because he really said, he's like, look, we own this. And I'm like, yeah, we own this. And I said, he's like, I want to own this, and I want to let people shoot this gun who are never, ever going to be able to shoot it ever, which is like or, people like us.
Like you said, see it even.
See it that, even.
That's in a private collection. Yep. It'll never see day. Never. It'll every generation, certain guns come around. The SARS Parker comes out once a generation when they auction it back off.
Absolutely.
To a guy you'll never see it again with. So in this case, the idea that I could shoot a 20-gauge Hammer Parker.
Lifter.
Lifter doesn't seem right for that era, even.
I think it's 1870s.
1870s.
That's how old this thing is. It's one of the very first 20 gauges Parker ever made. It is
okay,
extremely rare.
We're going to follow up where maybe I do get to shoot this, but I'll follow up then because I talked about the 12 gauge using more BBs.
Yep.
Do you think the 410 guys are actually just showing off when they come to an event like this?
I don't know if they're showing off. I just think they want to take their toy out there and play with it. I think we all want to do that.
Oh, yeah, we do.
And there's no one in the room. There's no one at the that person shooting at targets, there's no one that does not know what they're like. That's a 410. That's extremely rare. There's no one that doesn't know that.
No, but it, with a half ounce of shot, Dean made me look stupid today.
Yeah.
Because, well, and I talked to him earlier. He didn't say it then, but 20,000 reloads this year already.
Yeah.
He ought to make me look stupid at 20,000 rounds later. He made everybody look dumb.
Yeah.
He didn't take high overall, but my goodness, his wobble trap score with a 410 was ridiculous. But
I shot at my first clay target 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm sitting here talking to you. And we're having a wonderful conversation. And we're going to follow up on this conversation for the rest of our lives. I'm not going to go away. I'm not going to go away. What we continue to do and how we continue to grow this sport, that's not going to stop and go away. We have to continue to do this.
Yes, absolutely. And again, we, for the fun part about the SAS Classic here in March, the women's event, well, the women's trophy last year went to the only women that came. This year, there were 5 or 6 of them. Next year, hopefully 7 or 10.
Right.
And we have that. We had a youth, and there's going to be hopefully more youth. And the more we do this right, and I continue to muddle my way through the middle of the scorecard. Meanwhile, I've got a 410 genius on one end. I have some other guys on the other hand who beat me with the same model, right? Model 21, Ed Davison killed me again today, which that was not unexpected. Ed Davison can shoot. And he showed up with a gun, and he says, "You'll recognize that engraving is German." And from about 20 feet, you'll look at it, and you're like, yes, that deep relief only really comes out of a German engraver. And that gun's worth maybe, I know it's worth more than my truck, because I've got a cheap truck. I have a cheap house, and that gun came close.
Yeah.
But my goodness, there isn't a friendlier bunch here as well, right?
No, I shot with a guy who won 3 of the awards this weekend.
Look this way. The only guy who will never
know that there's an interview going on and he wants pictures taken.
The only guy who has forever rejected every invitation to come on my podcast is Dave Olshansky.
And he should.
Who has just come in and took a pot.
Don't let him fall into that trap, man.
He's
we edit that out.
We're not editing out one bit of me talking trash to Dave Olshansky until he comes on the podcast, because we're interviewing right now, and you're not sorry one bit.
Hey, these two guys represent the best of the side by side society.
Not the best shooters, but we are a good attitude.
Well, you guys are awesome, and thank you for coming today.
Thanks.
I need you on.
You just got me on. We're all set.
Oh, don't count that. All right. One last question then. What's your dream side by side?
I said dream side by side. Well, I'm on my PH zero frame. I love zero frame Parkers, but now after working on a lot of cases for a lot of different kinds of guns, don't tell the Parker Association this, but I'm starting to lean more and more towards the English guns. I think I'm turning English. I wear the English clothing. I buy my gun cases from England. I know the rate of the pound sterling. I'm going to the Holland and Holland and the Purdy and the Brady case place this fall. And don't tell anybody, but I'm starting to turn a little bit English.
I'm a German gun guy, right? A Merkel fell into my lap, and I shoot it incredibly well until days like today when I fall flat on my face and everyone takes me for my $5 bet.
But here's the thing.
But then
If you introduce me to a Merkel, and this week I'm like, I'm all German now. I'm 100%. I'm being slowly introduced to all of these makers. People talk about the Belgian guns that are over here, but I'm like, I don't know if they sent the best of the Belgian guns over here. There might be better Belgian guns in Belgium.
In Belgium.
There might be better German guns in Germany. I did a sour drilling 16 gauge for a guy, a case for that. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing since sliced toast. I'm like, yeah, I don't know about this stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And you're like, I'm like, yeah. I want this. And he's like, that's got a scope. I'm like, you're kidding me. So things like that is like, when you're just getting introduced to this stuff. And you're like, yeah, I'll do anything.
And I got this gun, but then at the same time, like you're saying, right? Until you find something new and you want an English case, I fell into an English setter, and now I have two. I have an English setter and I have an English Springer, and I have my German gun. And as much as I wanted to make a Sterlingworth work for me, I fell into that Merkel, and then family, of course, happened.
Yeah.
And so now I have the gun I bought before my kids ate two hogs and a cow a year.
Yep.
And the 20-acre garden that they could go through on a snack day. And so I have what I have, and I'll be happy until they move out and get careers where maybe they'll take their old man hunting. But, you know, in this case too, right, like you're saying, you've been introduced to more. And every time we come to the SAS Classic or we go to a Gentleman's Cup, we get introduced to a little more again, right?
Right.
Next thing you know, I see a Spanish gun that I might like, or an Italian, or a case from somewhere, or boots, or a hat.
I'd like to think that I've only been in this for 5 years, maybe 6 years at the most. I'd like to believe, and I truly believe, I've only touched the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's more of a rabbit hole than an iceberg.
I'm never intimidated by the high-end guns. Before I did the gun thing, I used to race bicycles semi-professionally. So spending $9,000 on a bicycle was nothing to me.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand when people start going down the rabbit hole. I'm like, yeah, I bought like a $50,000. I'm like, I totally understand. And my wife is, she's like, I totally understand. You're an idiot, but I totally understand.
Right. My wife is around here somewhere still, and I've been able to really introduce her. So I've done the husband role of make sure I don't ignore her until somewhere when the bourbon started. And then I can't find her. So she, again, those five ladies that came and shot today have taken her and let me do podcasting. So thank you to Nancy and the rest of the ladies. But again, you know, every time we show up, what new thing, a Damascus Parker was on a tailgate today for me to look at. And I don't want to afford 2.5-inch 16 cage shells, but what a beautiful gun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh.
And
the thing I learned is I found Damascus. Then I found Twist. Then I found Brown Twist. Then I found Brown Rust Damascus. Then I found Bernard Barrels. And once you see a set of Bernard Barrels, you'd be like, I now understand that barrels are not supposed to be just blue. And the carvings on guns are there for a reason. And I figured out that reason. And that is, when you're out hunting in the woods for upland birds, and it's sunny and 50 degrees, and there's no leaves on the tree, and there's a light breeze, and your dog's a little bit tired, or maybe you're not hunting with a dog, maybe you're a little tired, you can sit down on that log or on that old stump that was cut off that tree in the 1930s or the 1940s, and you can look at your gun, and your gun's going to tell you a story. So you're not just sitting there, you're actually being entertained by your gun, even though you're not using it.
Yeah, that there's the provenance around the room today, even though none of them were really maybe Rock Island or Julia's Auction kind of gun. Well,
there were some here.
There, the one that Ed showed me is insane. Now, some of the other ones, though, you never know what, and it was, oh, come on, why do I miss the name now? Gene Hill.
Oh.
Gene Hill has a couple of different stories about not knowing the owner of the gun ahead of him. And he sits down, and it's a story, one of my favorites, called the Woodcock Gun. And he talks about the gun being bored a certain way to a certain choke. And He wonders about what the guy would have thought when he was out, because the configuration is clearly open board, woodcock sort of gun. And he says, well, he had to have been in his horse cart, and he probably had some snacks under the seat, and those snacks would have been, and they would have been packed by the farm wife who knew the husband who had the gun, who put those snacks there, who had a couple of bottles of hard cider or an ale. And as he talks about the gun that this guy had, those guns were in this room today here.
Yes.
And even though Gene in that story didn't know the owner's name, he knew the gun. And in this case, we look around this room, and when this place was filled with people, how many of those guns had that story? And you just wonder, right? You look at it and go, the chambering, the barrels, the bore. And in the end, you say, I know I'm carrying this on for you, and I have no idea what you did.
Right.
And I don't know your name, but the gun is pushing maybe 150 years old, and you're still here, you're still shooting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the provenance, or the previous history of the gun is something that when I'm holding my gun, I think my gun was made in 1924. I'm like, why this gun? Why did you purchase this? Why this configuration? What were you hunting? Why were you hunting? Were you hunting to feed your family? Were you hunting for sportsmanship? What was going through your mind? And can I be you for one day? Can I go back to that day when you got your gun brand new and you opened it up and you're like, look, honey, I just got the greatest thing ever, and I'm going to go out hunting, and you go hunting all day, and were you successful, or were you not successful? That's the sort of thing. I mean, I dress in the period clothing. I hunt with a vintage gun, but it's all to go back to a time where I think that, believe it or not, I think I belong there. I belong in the anywhere from the 1910s up till about the Depression. I belong in that era. I collect arts and crafts furniture. It's from like the 1912s to the 1918s. Very finite period. My shotgun's from that period. My clothing's from that period. Everything has to be old because it means something to me. And I think that the guys here, everybody has my father gave me this gun. My grandpa gave me this gun. My uncle gave me this gun. My great uncle gave me. Everybody has that story. And everybody wants to go back to when the person that gave them the gun, or the person that put them here, was their age, that young kid. And they want to feel that feeling and go, that's why they did this for me.
Right. I hadn't thought about it that way. I want to be you for even a couple
just
hours.
Just a couple hours.
Shooting clays, or at the preserve, or out with my dog. I not only want to carry on what you started with this gun, but in a way, I want to be you.
Right. I've never shot a clay target. I've always shot at a bird.
Yeah.
And it's always a grouse, and it's always, I'm like, okay, this bird jumps up, and I have to get this. I want to have grouse tonight for dinner. I have to get this. I have to execute this.
Yeah.
And that's how I operate. Now, some people come out here for sport and fun and just shoot very, very old guns. I got no problem with that. But for me, the vintage person, I want that feeling. I love the feeling of old. I love that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a certain craftsmanship to that gun to begin with. But again, going that feeling of, you can step back and imagine what it was like. And some of the guns here were grouse configurations, clearly by the choke and the chambering and the bore. And some of them were more pheasant guns. And then you get over into what we shot, wobble skeet. And I didn't notice a 10 gauge at all, but you could have had some full duck guns of who knows what variety out there, because that's the gauge that was going to work. They're all here in a way reliving this. And of course, I'm the imposter because I had to pick continental Germany.
Doesn't matter.
For my gun.
Doesn't matter.
And my gun is young enough where I'm the first guy. I will be when my son, one of my sons will get this gun. And they'll be like, well, Dad did this. Okay, well, I will do this then as well. And whether it's with the springers or the setters, because that's what they've decided to choose for themselves as 14-year-old boys, right? When they get that to the point where one of them gets my gun, they get to be the second guy in that line to go, I'm going to go do these things, and they get to be me. Well, minus probably the bad attitude sometimes, hopefully. That's what me being a parent is for. But at the same time, right, you see guys here that are 2 and 3 owners and generations in, my gun being newer and steel-proofed and 3-inch chamber. I'm number one, and there's no negative to it. No. I'm just the first guy.
Absolutely, there's
and,
no.
And the purpose of me buying it when I bought this gun as my dream gun was I'm guy number one.
Yep.
And this gun will last till guy number four as long as it continues on. And hopefully it doesn't turn into a safe queen. I definitely don't treat it that way. It's going to be worn out by the time I'm done.
That is good. Yeah. The only pressure you have in life with your gun is creating the dream in the next person's head to say, look, this is Dad's gun. He owned it for... He used to do this, and this, and he shot this, and that's what we're never going to sell it, and we're not going to yard sale it, and I don't shoot, but we're never going to ever get rid of it. And then, like, it could go, like, 3 generations with no one ever shoot it, and then all of a sudden, there's somebody goes, let's see if it works. And they're like, we'll take it to a gunsmith. Okay. And then that person shoots it, and they are the third generation of you, which you have no clue.
Right.
But you're like, oh my God, I've just passed this on to like third generation great great aunt, which who I've never met.
Right.
That's how simple it is.
Yeah, and I bought a gun that I know came from the same factory that made Panzer barrels.
Absolutely.
It will be more than ready.
Yes.
For 4 generations later, it's been simply waiting to come back out and shoot some more. And I know I won't wear it out. I won't wear it in. You know, and the same thing with a lot of these guns. They're finally getting good.
Yeah.
Two and three owners and 3 generations later, they're getting good.
The Hansen family Parker, I saw shot when I was 9 years old. The second time I ever saw it shot, I was 59 years old. So, and it hung on the gun rack in the house every day, and you looked at it, but you know I never shot it because this is it's going to explode. My brother got it. He cleaned it. Cleaned all the paint chips off it from the house being painted over 50 years. And we put some RSD loads in it, and we shot it in the backyard. And then we rolled my dad, my 89-year-old dad, out there. And it's a 10-gauge. And he looked at me, and he goes, I'm going to let both barrels go. And I said, absolutely. And he pulled both triggers on that 10-gauge. 89 years old, and it sent him ass over tea kettle. And my brother goes, I'll never forget this. He goes, did he pull both barrels? And my dad looked at me, he goes, you goddamn right I did. We still have the gun. The gun actually has deer hunting sights on it because my great great uncle and my great uncle, they would violate deer at night to feed the family. That's the kind of provenance. And like Dean always says, he's like, I own a $40,000 shotgun. If the house catches on fire, the cheapest gun we own is the one I'm grabbing. He's like, we have to take the 10 gauge out. The rest can burn up, but we have to take this gun.
Oh, wow. So, all right. We're going to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Let's get your name again and what you're doing.
Yep. I am Matt Hansen. I'm with Superior Case Restoration. I do vintage gun case restorations for your shotgun or your pistol or your violin or your whatever you want to put in to make it look nice.
Right. It's the felt and the leather and the oak and the things that
all
you
of
want.
It. Yeah. And I hand stitch. I do repairs. All of it is hand stitch. All of the stitching is I buy antique threads. I buy antique leathers, I buy antique parts, and I put them on your gun. So, all custom, all one-on-one relationships I have with the people who I've given cases to, Many are my very good friends now and just totally enjoy what I do.
Excellent. Cool. So,
I'd like to take a minute here at the very end to thank you all again for listening. Again, I appreciate it, and I appreciate those who support the podcast. If you can, please go through the process of rating, reviewing, subscribing, sharing with a friend, any of the things that would publicize the podcast a little bit more and get out to a few more ears. You never know where our next fan will be found, and hopefully you can help spread the word a little bit more about Bird Camp. If you want to contact us, of course, mi.birdcamp@gmail.com is the best way to do it. Might take me a day or two to respond, but once it's in writing, you know, it's going to be easy to find and get back to you with, as well as Bird Camp on Facebook and Bird Camp Pod on Instagram. Anyway, with those, again, thank you very much for listening.